What if the greatest threat to civilization wasn't climate change, nuclear war, or economic collapse, but a single word? Across the globe, from Texas school boards to Vatican councils, from Hungarian parliament to Italian political rallies, one term has been elevated to existential menace: gender. This isn't hyperbole. Legislation is being drafted, rights are being stripped, and lives are being destroyed, all in the name of protecting society from what amounts to an academic concept. How did we arrive at a moment where acknowledging that gender exists as something distinct from biological sex became tantamount to civilizational suicide? The answer reveals less about gender itself and more about the authoritarian impulses lurking beneath the surface of contemporary politics, waiting for the right phantom to animate them into action. The anti-gender movement executes a calculated inversion. It transforms vulnerable minorities, transgender and gender diverse people, into existential threats, while casting those wielding actual power as victims. Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni warns that gender advocates will strip people of their sexed identity, even as her government strips trans people of legal recognition. This reflects coordinated strategy. Organizations like CitizenGo, with 9 million followers across 50 countries, operate as transnational infrastructure. Founded in Spain in 2013, CitizenGo has campaigned against abortion services in Kenya, spread disinformation across Africa, and maintained connections with the World Congress of Families, a network linking Orthodox, Catholic, and evangelical organizations defending the natural family. The phantom's power lies in its flexibility. Gender becomes whatever local anxieties demand, Marxist ideology or capitalist decadence, colonizing force or unwanted migrant, tyrannical imposition or dangerous libertarianism. This adaptability allows the movement to absorb different contexts while maintaining singular focus on anyone challenging traditional hierarchies of sex and power. Long before politicians weaponized anti-gender rhetoric, the Vatican laid its theological groundwork. In 2004, Joseph Ratzinger, soon to become Pope Benedict XVI, warned Catholic bishops against gender theory, arguing it represents man's attempt at self-emancipation from creation and the Creator. If people are free to constitute themselves as they like, he claimed, they destroy their human essence. This framing empowered political movements worldwide. Monsignor Tony Onatrella called gender theory an intellectual virus comparable to Marxism, warning African bishops against UN-sponsored rights groups. The contradictions: gender is simultaneously too relativistic and too individualistic, reveal that logical coherence wasn't the goal. What matters is maintaining traditional authority over bodies and relationships. The Vatican's influence extends beyond Catholic communities. Evangelical groups share the conviction that feminist and LGBTQIA+ rights are unnatural and dangerous. Russian Orthodox oligarchs now coordinate with American evangelicals through figures like Alexei Komov, who serves on CitizenGo's board while representing the World Congress of Families in Russia. The anti-gender movement has achieved genuine transnational religious cooperation, united by a common enemy. Oklahoma's Senate Bill 114 prohibits materials addressing sex, sexual preferences, gender identity, or content of a sexual nature in schools. Florida's Don't Say Gay Bill bans classroom instruction on sexual orientation or gender identity through grade 3. Alabama criminalized gender-affirming care with up to 10 years imprisonment for physicians. Texas Governor Abbott directed authorities to investigate parents providing such care as abusers. Critics manufacture a pornographic fantasy where children are violated by what they read, blurring indoctrination with pedophilia. The irony is brutal. Feminism and LGBTQIA movements have most clearly opposed sexual violence and taught consent, yet they're cast as predators. Christopher Rufo, architect of anti-critical race theory legislation, rails against gender theory while admitting, "I don't give a shit about this stuff," when asked to explain it. These opponents fear universities for producing open minds that question inherited assumptions. Medical organizations, including the American Psychiatric Association and American Medical Association, have opposed these restrictions, noting that treatments like hormone blockers can be life-saving. Yet legislators proceed anyway. The movement claims to protect children while denying them healthcare, claims to defend parental rights while investigating parents, claims to preserve freedom while banning books. J.K. Rowling's shift from beloved author to anti-trans activist exposes stark contradictions. She dismisses trans youth suicide warnings as lacking robust data, citing psychiatrist David Bell, yet offers no data herself. Bell's Tavistock experience involved youth already receiving care, not those denied treatment who face dramatically higher suicide risks. Rowling claims trans advocates deny the reality of sex, asking, if sex isn't real, there's no same-sex attraction. This strawman ignores reality. Trans advocates aren't monolithic. Many, like writer Andrea Long Chu, engage deeply with sex as a concept. The real debate isn't whether sex exists, but whether it's immutable and determines social possibilities. Kathleen Stock highlights isolated incidents of trans women committing violence in women's prisons, while ignoring that trans prisoners face monthly assaults in UK facilities. If preventing sexual assault were her concern, she might address male guards assaulting female inmates, or acknowledge that women assigned female at birth also commit sexual violence. The assumption that having a penis predisposes someone to rape contradicts feminist analysis showing rape as social domination, not biological destiny. Trans-exclusionary feminism abandons core feminist principles, justice through alliance, affirming difference, building solidarity across struggles. Despite differing views on sex and gender, we must build coalitions focused on ending oppression. The binary sex model fails scientific scrutiny. Thomas Perdue's developmental systems theory shows how organisms and environments co-evolve, while biologist Susan Oyama demonstrates that genes gain causal relevance only through interaction with developmental factors, dismantling genetic determinism. Women's sports debates reveal how sex fragments into hormonal, anatomical, and chromosomal features that refuse alignment. Studies show 16.5% of male athletes had low testosterone, while 13.7% of female athletes had high levels, significant overlap demolishing simple categories. The International Olympic Committee revised guidelines when research proved performance doesn't correlate predictably with endogenous testosterone. Sexual dimorphism functions as a normative framework dictating perception, not mere fact. When contradicting evidence surfaces, the binary hypothesis dismisses rather than revises, exposing itself as obligatory epistemic norm rather than good science. Trans-exclusionary group Sex Matters rejects publications in Scientific American and Nature presenting sex as complex, claiming contemporary research is harmful to scientific discourse while offering zero counter-evidence. Facts never exist outside frameworks determining what matters. This doesn't deny material reality. It recognizes that frameworks organizing sexed phenomena shape observation itself. Bodies take form within social institutions and historical contexts, a materialism far more sophisticated than positivism's decontextualized facts. Contemporary authoritarians use eradication language against trans people, positioning themselves as liberators while assaulting civil rights. Unlike 20th century fascism's charismatic dictators, today's authoritarian trends operate through distributed networks, strengthening control systems while claiming to defend traditional values. Attacks on trans healthcare and book bans show how fascism emerges gradually. Seemingly isolated policies accumulate into systematic oppression. The challenge isn't exposing factual inaccuracies. It's deflating the emotional power of fascist phantasms while producing an alternative vision of collective liberation. This requires building robust alliances guided by consistent principles. We cannot oppose discrimination against ourselves while enabling it against others. Those defending trans rights must also oppose racism. Those fighting patriarchy must also challenge economic exploitation. Those resisting colonialism must also affirm bodily autonomy. We represent the side of livable life and genuine freedom. Our response must articulate a vision so vital, so aligned with human flourishing, that the phantom loses its power. The question isn't who's afraid of gender, it's who's brave enough to imagine a world where everyone can live freely, without fear of erasure, in the fullness of who they are.